Can you tell me a little bit about yourself, how long you've been doing this, blah, 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 just so that I have some baseline knowledge about yourself?
Sure. Yeah, I started doing this. I took a class starting last January and really liked it. And that class, I think we had, 8 weeks, and then we had a graduation show. And in the same time period, at the beginning of February, I got hold of your materials and, devoured those and thought those were really helpful as well. I got into this. I'm 44. I'm a law professor, and people have always said I was funny, all my life. And I used to always think it would be fun to do stand-up, but I never really entertain the thought more than that idea. And for some reason last fall, I guess I call it a midlife crisis. Last fall, I was reading a newspaper that was advertising some improv shows. Some little light bulb went off and I said, man, I want to do stand up. And I, right when I get to my office, I mean, isn't it weird? I get to my office, I Googled, or I don't know if I Googled, I looked in Boston where I could take any class and signed up, instantly, and that was in November, and then I was just very excited for the class coming up. So I've done some humor writing, and I've tried to write a novel or two that I would, at one point I was writing fiction, and I was always trying to be serious, and people were laughing at my stuff, so finally I said a few years ago, I'm like, well, I guess I'm going to write funny stuff, and so anyway, that's how I got into it.
All right, okay. Well, who did you take your class from, if I may ask?
Yeah, this guy named Dana J. Vine, and he's pretty known in Boston, and he puts on a Thursday night show of comedians, and he was really good for a first class in the sense that he worked really hard just to get us writing. Like, he started off saying, there are no rules in comedy. Get writing, we'll work on your stuff and make it funny. So he got on us such that we just generated like page after page of stuff. And then we started to hone it down after that. And, he talked about some different rules and the like, but he was very much into the idea of, comedies about expressing yourself and talking about things that you want to talk about and that you find interesting and funny and, et cetera, et cetera. So that was
right.
That was,
right.
And that was a nice approach to start with too.
That's I don't normally hear that. So that makes me feel good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's jump into the session here. What, what can I do for you? What's on your mind? What can I help you with?
Let's see, I guess a couple of things. The first is one thing I was wondering about my material is sometimes I wonder if I'm not, I'm very into the idea of trying to give, trying to use as few words as possible, and trying to give short setups. But then there are sometimes I wonder if I'm giving setups that are too short. Like, for example, that one joke I have about was the anal bowling night, right? The typo in the email at work. And I get up there and I just go right into it and I say, I got an email at work, inviting me to our company's anal bowling party. Which, I think is funny,
It is funny. It's funny by itself.
Okay, yeah, but then there's my question, and this is the key question that sometimes I wonder, and maybe it's because I've mostly had small crowds, because I've done this, I've done it 5 times, and I know I have to get out more and do more, but sometimes I wonder if not enough people kind of get that and if I should instead do something such as this, which would be, I sometimes get emails at work with really embarrassing typos and I wonder what to do about it. And then say, the other day I got invited to our company's anal bowling party.
Okay, so right there, let me just stop.
Uh-huh.
You're adding extra words when you say, and I'm wondering what to do about it. You don't need that. Okay. You've got the perfect setup in two lines.
Okay.
You know, say that first line again.
I didn't write it down, but I think it was, sometimes I get emails with embarrassing typos.
Same typos. Okay. So you're set up in just a few words, because everybody gets email. Everybody knows what a typo is. And then you can go right in. The other day, I got an email inviting me to the, blah, blah, anal bowling party.
Right.
And, okay, so in two, so that's a punchline in and of itself, even though it's still part of your setup.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a good point, because I was thinking that if I didn't set that line up where I just start with the other day I got an email, it's almost like people have to figure out too many things, you know, right then and there.
Well, you have to give your audience enough. One of the problems that most comedians have is they give too much information.
Right,
and that
right.
is, and the main reason that they do that is because they focus on writing. And I don't know if you've noticed in my material, I don't really talk a whole lot about, I don't use the word writing. I use the term
right.
comedy material development. And that's on purpose, because we write differently than we talk, because writing is one-dimensional. There's no voice inflection and tone. There's no body language. There's nothing. It's one-dimensional. Subsequently, in order to build thing in someone's mind, this picture in someone's mind, ultimately, when you quote-unquote write, you have to use many more words that are just not required when you're talking to someone.
Right, definitely, definitely. Yeah, and one way I develop material is I walk around. I have this little digital voice recorder. And
excellent.
Yeah, and because I know you talk about that kind of thing too, where, you know, I figure that ultimately I'm speaking this stuff. So I walk around and something strikes me as funny, and I speak it in, and I develop it through speaking it in, and then later I start writing it out and trying to hone it after that.
Right.
It makes
it more
fun.
Oh, pardon me. Go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry.
I was going to say it makes my life, like, the other thing I've really enjoyed about getting into this is it's made my life a lot more fun. You know, where I'm looking around and funny stuff hits me and I speak it out and develop it, and so I've really enjoyed doing this.
Sure. If you're an observant person, it's hard not to see some of the things that go on around us.
Right.
Like for example, I was standing in line at the store. Guy in front of me has three items. He's got some cat treats, some candles, and a six pack of beer. And my first thing was, man, I think that need more beer. you know what I'm saying? I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
Exactly.
So. You know, even though I haven't actively performed for, 5 years now, you never get rid of the comedy thing. It just never goes away.
Uh-huh.
You know, I constantly come up with material. Just looking around, stuff that I read online, things that people tell me. If it strikes my funny bone, then I just, you know, you have a way to explain it. But let me tag on to this, because, dude, those two lines set you up to talk about that topic for a long time.
I was talking
with one of my high-level comedy colleagues who's one of the top five ventriloquists in the world. His name's Kim Groves, and he knows a guy who does 45 minutes, if you can believe this, on farting, never says the word fart, pass gas, cut the cheese, nothing, and he sets it up like this. This is why I'm really into topic-based comedy. He sets it up like this. He goes, have you ever walked into an elevator and you need to relieve a little pain, and he puts his hand on his stomach, you know? And he goes, as soon as you do, somebody walks in.
Yep.
Now, here's what just happened. Everybody can picture that in their mind. Everybody knows what happened. And for the next 45 minutes, he can stay on topic and never has to say anything. He never has to be, you know, rude or crude or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he can go everywhere with it. You know, his boss walks on the elevator, or some woman he wants to ask out or has a date with, or, you know what I mean? Like, he can do so much with it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's just, you know, your two lines of that just you know, struck me. I'm like, golly, man, he's got this thing set up, punched, and ready to go in very, very few words. That's stand-up comedy right there.
Right. Good. Yeah, one thing, too, I was struck. I thought your suggestion of, you know, rereading chapters 3 to 9 was really good because I really dived in and made all these notes on the materials last February. And then as I was rereading, I'm like, you know, it's like, you know, everyone always says, but I saw so many different things this time around. And one thing I think I was really struck by is, you know, so far I've had, you know, the 5 to 7 minutes on stage, and I probably, you know, I like doing a lot of different topics, but it also sort of ends up becoming almost closer to old school comedy, right? Like, because every topic I have, I've developed further, you know, in my notes and the like. But I'm sort of afraid, I guess, to stick on one topic. So rereading the materials pointed up to me that, you know, I shouldn't be so afraid of doing that and just, you know, extend it and see what happens.
Oh, absolutely. Let me tell you the advantage that topic-based comedians, also referred to as storytellers, have over the set-up punch guys. Set-up punch guys, or the joke tellers, as I like to refer to them, end up having to reset up and punch, reset up and punch. And so it becomes exponentially more difficult to gain momentum.
Right.
Now, not to say that it can't be done. I don't pick and choose between what styles. But you take a look at any of the topic-based comedians, whether it's Eddie Izzard, Bill Cosby, Tim Allen, any of them, you'll find that most of them use a combination, but it's focused mostly on topic. And once they're on that topic, they can stay on that topic and do what is known as get on a roll.
Right.
And that's what you want. You want your audience not being able to breathe. You want people blowing milk out their nose.
Yeah.
You know? And the way that I found that I was able to do that is whenever you do topic-based stuff. Like, when I was in my stuff, I would go and for a headliner set, I'd make my set list out, and I'd have, depending upon where I was going to be at and how many people were in the audience, I'd only have 7 to 9 things that I was going to talk about.
Uh-huh.
Now, there was a lot of things that I was talking about within those 7 to 9 things. Shortest bit that I had was a bit about flies, and that was 3 minutes long. That was my shortest.
Wow.
A lot of my stuff was anywhere from 7, 10, even 20 minutes long.
Wow.
Yeah, because what I could do is just take all these different aspects of a process and what have you.
Uh-huh.
And time together. Like one big chunk, 15 to 17 minutes, I would talk about the process of getting a driver's license, looking at the book at the weird traffic laws that you got to study to get your driver's license, and then end up with some other strange laws at the end of that bit. That's depending upon the size of the crowd, that was 15 to 20 minutes.
Wow.
Just on that one thing, covering three or four or five different laws that was right out of the book, man. Some of the stuff the government puts out is pretty funny.
Right. That's true.
You know, I used to teach equal opportunity in the Navy, and they gave me the slide presentation, and there was mistakes on them. And I used to have a blast with that.
That is cool.
Yeah.
That's fine. See, that's a really good point. Like I you know, that idea of being able to, you know, go, you know, 15 minutes on something or 7 minutes on something, that's something I realized. And what was funny is when I last performed, you know, I came home, I wrote out some notes, I listened to my program, I watched your video of, is it J.R. Redman or the guy?
J.R. Redwater.
Yeah, and that was good. I mean, that I was just like, wow, he used so few words, and he had the people just rolling.
You want to know the secret? I'm going to tell you the secrets, and they're right there in front of your face. And people miss this all the time, and this is one of the reasons why I don't focus on writing. See, here's the deal. Stand-up comedy is three-dimensional. meaning to say you've got the words, which is the communication medium. You've got your voice, inflection, and tone, which is the audio section. And then you've got your body language, facial expressions, and whatnot. That is your visual thing. So the reality is, if you take a look at stuff that you want to talk about and you're expecting for it to read funny on paper, you're going to find that 95% of your stuff, if you handed it to somebody to read, they would go, what are you doing, dude? Because it's just like I was telling you, this whole writing thing, this is one of the things that boxes comedians in. Not only does it box them in, it makes them less funny, because now they feel like their idea of funny is what it reads like. Presentation, on the other hand, 93% of your ability to generate laughter in any audience has nothing to do with the words that you say. Nothing. So it's more important to have commitment to your material, okay? I have a have you seen my blog?
Yeah, yep. And I've been getting onto that more lately.
Yeah, if you go and look up there was a time where I would say, and this was all I would say because I couldn't explain it better at the time, I would tell comedians that when you're up on stage, no matter what you're saying, it needs to be real to you. Because if it's real to you, it's real to the audience. Well, I've gotten better, and my knowledge has increased on how to verbalize this. What it really amounts to, and by the way, you can thank the Learning Channel, the Discovery Channel for this stuff, watching some of the programs on body language and whatnot.
Right.
But basically what happens is if that material is real for you, you then have what can only be described is body language alignment, meaning to say that the words that you're saying, the voice inflection and tone that you're using, and your body language are all in alignment. It's almost like the difference between someone telling the truth and someone telling a lie. Are you with me?
Yeah, totally.
So if your body, if you don't have what I've coined as body language alignment, then on a subconscious level, your audience knows something is amiss. They may be able to pick it up consciously, but very few people will. But on a subconscious level, they go, something's amiss here, I'm being joked, and then they respond accordingly, which is minimally. Whereas if your stuff is for real, I mean, it's for real to you in that moment. I mean, that's what happened. I mean, in your mind, in your heart, in your soul, that's what happened. No matter how, whether it's 100% truthful or 0% truthful, doesn't matter. But for that slice of time, it needs to be real because all of these things are going to line up.
Right.
And when they do that, it increases your impact to that audience because now, you know, have you ever heard comedians talk about, or people talk about how you get sucked into somebody's act?
Yes.
This is how it's done. See, I'm one of those analytic geeks that likes to know what it is I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know why. I just don't want to hear, oh, well, it's this. That's not good enough. I want to know why. I want to know the physiology. I want to know because there's always an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the key right here. And everything I'm telling you lines up with exactly what I say in my materials.
Right. Yeah, you know what's funny is the other realization I've had in preparing for the conference here was that, you know, while I speak out my material when I create it and develop it, and then I write it and then I, you know, further speak it out. Because I do so much writing in my regular life that ultimately I'm still thinking writing. Like I'm so far when I've performed, I have to take your advice of buying a mic and a little thing because so far when I performed, I've kept the mic on the stand and talked from there. So I haven't really used my body much.
There's advantages and disadvantages to that.
Right.
Not that I move around a whole lot. I want that mic stand out of my way because it gives me a little bit more mobility. Not that I'm when I was on stage, I was, you know, had any kind of manic stuff.
Right.
But your head is stuck where that microphone is.
Yep.
Whereas I want the freedom of body language. And when I talk to people about body language, sometimes they get the impression that you have to over-exaggerate your body language. Absolutely not. I mean, you can tilt your head a certain way after you say something, and that's a punchline.
Right.
It doesn't have to be words. That's another thing that people don't realize. They're under the impression that all your punchline have to be words. And no, that is not true. It can be, you know, if you take a look at Redwater stuff, he's got punchlines there that are just gestures.
Yeah, he just like shrugs his shoulders or something, right? And he's got the
absolutely,
laugh.
You know, absolutely. So those are some things. And that's where my stuff differs from this whole writing stuff down on paper. Don't get me wrong. I had all my stuff for the first 3 years I was doing this in single line format, boom, 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 went through it constantly. And then as I, you know, matured in my own comedy career, the only time I have stuff in single line format is when, you know, I ran into problems. If I couldn't quite get it, I needed to be able to see what it looks like, see where my punchlines are.
Uh-huh.
And I'll see how many lines it takes. Now, on the topic of rehearsal, I can give you a secret on rehearsal.
Okay, good.
What's that?
Okay, yeah, good.
Okay. Now, as you can tell, I'm big on voice inflection and tone and body language, right?
Right.
Okay. What you say, what you do, and the tone that you use it in is connected to your hand just like your – I mean, is connected just like your fingers are to your hand.
Right.
There is a posture of confidence, okay? And that posture of confidence is head up, looking forward, shoulders back. Your body automatically responds to that confidence, to that posture of confidence. When you're in that posture, your mind knows right then that we're confident, okay? And, you know, if you want to juxtaposition that, you know, if you're depressed or disturbed or whatever, your shoulders are forward, your head is down, and then your body knows that you're in the, you know, posture of depression and will react accordingly.
Yeah, that's
so as you're rehearsing your material, I absolutely recommend that you rehearse and you know, you can use anything. You can use a hairbrush. You can use a carrot.
Right.
It doesn't matter what you use, but you that microphone being, if you're going to hold the mic, that microphone being next to your mouth, no matter where you go, needs to be a second nature.
Right.
But as you're rehearsing, and again, this is not exaggerated stuff. It's shoulders back, head up. Because when you put your shoulders back, your chest automatically comes out a little bit. And that's the way you rehearse. So then when you get on stage, that's all you know to do. Just shoulders back, head up, and then you've got the position of confidence. Confidence is a big deal that a lot of people on my email list think is they want it, they don't want to work for it. Anything you talk about that involves subconscious mind stuff and that kind of stuff, that's all stuff. Okay? I just happen to have an education, so I understand how those things work.
Right.
For real.
And well, that's true, because I've found when I do, you know, teaching or speaking, and this, I've done this too in comedy, like I remember standing up straight and feeling my feet planted, and I just felt way more confident and better, you know, on the stage. So you're definitely right on that.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the big problems that you see this at open mics, you watch comedians that go on stage and they take notes.
Right.
They take notes and look at notes on stage. And I'm going to tell you straight up, the second you look down at a note, you've lost contact with that audience. You've lost any ability to gain any momentum with that audience. It's gone. And you watch them. I don't care if they're a headline comedian. I watch headliners get up and use notes because they're, quote-unquote, trying out new material. Well, two things. First of all, that's unprofessional. Second of all, you're never going to develop any real momentum or get really good feedback by connecting, unconnecting with your audience. It's just not going to happen. You'll never develop momentum that way.
Yep. Yeah, that's true, because I've seen some. That's one thing I've made sure never to do, you know, is bring up notes. I agree with you, because I've seen that myself just in the few times that I've been doing this. I watch these people fumbling through the notes, and you're right, the audience starts fidgeting around.
Actually, here we go. Either on a conscious or subconscious level, they're going, okay, this guy's a loser, or this gal's a loser.
Yep, yep.
And that's, you know, and then they disconnect. And then they wonder why it takes so long for them to develop material. you got to be kidding me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rehearsal. Comedians don't rehearse. They think because they've got a mouth and two thumbs, they don't have to. I'm here to tell you that is the biggest mistake. Now, here's the thing. My last show
uh-huh.
was in my own restaurant on the beach on the Big Island of Hawaii. I wasn't a guy that was big on the TV thing. I wanted to do my own thing. I don't care
yep.
about TV. Never have. But I want to do my own thing. Well, before that first show, I hadn't been on stage for 18 months. That's
right.
a long time not to be on stage and then go on with the one-man show. But here's what I did. 3 months before that show, I started rehearsing. And I started rehearsing 10 and 15 minutes at the beginning and gradually got to the point where I was going through my material, my whole show, sometimes multiple times in a day.
Wow.
Okay? And when I stepped out on that stage, no one knew that I hadn't been on stage for 18 months. No one knew.
Mm-hmm.
There was no clue. Not to mention the fact that I brought in 15 new units, not just my old stuff. I wasn't just practicing my old stuff. And it just flowed and it worked and, you know, just like I wanted it to. And it was just awesome. And,
cool.
if we had been able to get a liquor license there, I'd still be there.
Here's a question for you, because I totally, that completely makes sense to me. Like one time I did a set, like I sent you the set where I did my my first time, the graduation show. That was one of them.
Yeah, so with the philosophical archetypes and whatnot.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. And that one, like a few weeks later, I did a set, and I used, you know, a lot of that material, or I didn't say most of that material. And there were a couple times, because I'd listened to it to prepare for the new set, and it was
excellent.
Part of visualizing and stuff. But here's what killed me. There was one time where I delivered some line that I can't remember which one it was exactly, but in the audio, it gets these giant laughs. So then I'm up on this stage and there's this little crowd and I deliver the line, there's like no laughs. And I'm thinking like, man, this isn't how I remember it. This isn't how I visualize this. And what do you do, like, when you're performing and that happens? I mean, I know probably the answer is you just, like, say, fine, you move on or whatever, but it was such a weird thing to have happen. You know,
well, you got to, okay. Let me just say this, and I think this will answer your question.
Okay.
There is a difference between an intellectual audience and general public audience.
Right.
That's the key. So as you're doing general public stuff, you're either going to have to do a little more explanation on different things. You know, you can always stop and go, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to use multi-syllable words.
Right.
or those big words kill people sometimes. Don't you agree? Yeah, so I'm going to tone this down. I'm going to start visiting trailer parks across the country to get this stuff down. Anyway. Dude, I used to get up on stage, man, and I'd throw something out there that I knew worked, and it'd sit there, and I'd go, I'm sorry, I must be going too fast. Let me slow this shit down. Here we go. I'd say, damn it, wake up. I got stuff to do, man. Well, I say this to, I've said this to almost everybody that I'm on a coaching call, and that I've done coaching calls for. And oddly enough, everybody wanted theirs on Tuesday.
Weird.
I've just been slammed. Well, I just wanted it now. I expected it to be a little more spread out. And it's like Tuesday and Wednesday. It's like, oh, man, I'm just about done.
That's excellent. That's really excellent.
Yeah, which is fine with me. It's just I've got other stuff that I need to do. But, shoot, I lost my train of thought. We were talking about, what the heck were we talking about?
Oh, you know, what to do when no one, you throw out the line and...
One of the things that, you know, there's this school of thought, whether you rehearse too much or rehearse not enough, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't think you can rehearse enough, and the reason being is I want to be able to walk in and out of my act at will.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's important because people will... They'll yell stuff out. I'm not necessarily talking about hecklers. They'll go, oh, yeah, or something like that. And I want to be able to respond to it without screwing with my act.
Right.
I want to be able to deal with people who are talking right in the front. I want to be able to do these kinds of things, because here is my attitude. Here is my attitude when it comes to standing in front of a group of people. I don't care if it's in a class. I don't care if it's in a lecture, if it's a speaking engagement, or it's on a stand-up comedy stage. Okay? The second I get that microphone, I own that facility. I own it.
Right.
It's all mine. That stage is mine. The mic is mine. And these people are guests in my facility. I'm not a guest there for them. They're guests in my house. Subsequently, if I invited someone over to my house and we're having a conversation and they got up and unzipped their pants and peed on my couch, I would say something to them.
Right.
And that's the way I approach my time on stage. If you're going to interrupt my show, if you're going to talk during my show, I'm going to stop and you're going to get attention that you're going to rapidly find out that you do not want.
Right.
And I start very, very low level and work my way up, depending upon how cool they think they are.
Right.
You know, start out really cool. Then you get, it's like, I'm sorry, I didn't get that. What's your name? And then there'd be 9 times out of 10, there'd be this long pause, and I'd go, check your ID on your ID. And that would be enough in most instances if I can look over in the direction they're at and do that and say, okay, no problem, really. If anybody else has any kind of epileptic issues, please seek the people in the back. And then I just go right back into my spot. Being able to do that, Brian, puts you in the lead spot. You are the alpha comedian.
Right.
They know right then that you're not putting up with it. And you notice I didn't say anything bad. I didn't pick on anybody or nothing. Well, not.
Yeah. No, well, what I like is you cut right to the heart of it, because people who heckle think that they're in the crowd. They think they're anonymous, right? So psychologically, you completely destroy that.
They're absolutely not anonymous. And not only are they not anonymous, if they keep jacking with me, I'll pull the audience in to shut them up.
Right.
because the reality is not only are they disturbing the show, they're disturbing those audience members around them.
Yeah.
And I use that to my advantage. Yeah, I shut them right up. And if they want to keep going, you know, what's your name? Brian! I say, okay, thanks for being at the show, Dick. So here's what we need to do. I don't know if you were aware of this, Dick, but I'm kind of busy, I want to give you personal attention, but I'm kind of busy entertaining this other 100 people right now. So if you could just hold your comments so after the end, that would be most appreciated by myself, not only myself, but the bouncer that has a gun in the back. I mean, dude, I just don't put up with no guff. None.
Right.
None. People talking in my head during the front. I'd look down. Right in the front, they're talking like they're in a bar, in a regular bar. And I'd bend down and look at them and go, you know, I am so sorry. I was talking while you was. Let me know when you're done. And then just look off. And dude, everybody's looking at them. They're sitting there. And after a few seconds of time, they go, oh, okay, you're done. I'm going to go ahead and start back up. Is that cool? Good.
That is good. You know what's funny about that is I haven't experienced hecklers yet, but you're right. Like, so much of it is the initial attitude that you take, right? Like you said, you're the alpha comedian and it's your stage. I've never heard anyone say that, So like, so many people go up and they're afraid of being heckled because they think they're just at the mercy of the audience and, et cetera. So that's powerful. I like that a lot.
No, I don't do heckler lines. When I first started, I would write heckler lines. I've heard probably all the stock heckler lines. I don't do that. I stop, mm-hmm. and then they get 100% of me, who's not very gruntled at the time.
Yeah, yep.
You get my drift.
Yep.
And my facial expressions show, and this is one of the things that people don't realize, comedians don't realize, your facial expressions, unless you're in a room with more than 500 people, dude, they can see your facial expressions, and up to a certain point halfway through the audience, they can even see your micro facial expressions. And again, whether they are consuming this consciously or subconsciously, they know.
Yep, that's true.
And like I said, as you can see, I focus more on the delivery. I focus more on the presentation than I do on the words. Because paper for me is nothing more than an editing tool to get the words down to the minimum.
Yeah, I like that. So say going forward for me, should I sort of take, say one of these topics and just, say in the next couple months I'm getting 5 to 7 minutes, should I take these topics and try to extend one for the whole time and just work on delivering it well, or maybe two?
Yeah, to the extent that you can. Now, let me ask you about your teaching job. How often do you get to present in front of students?
Oh, yeah, I do. I teach twice a week right now, and I'll be teaching 4 times a week. It's like 2 hours each time. So I'll be teaching in the spring semester, 4 times a week, so.
Well, let me tell you, this is what people also have a hard time grasping. I didn't develop any of my comedy material. My initial comedy material, didn't develop it at any comedy club, not
right.
Any open mics or anything, okay? I was teaching in the Navy, and I would teach 2 hours or 4 hours a week, 6 weeks at a time. And then
okay.
I taught traffic school after, and I was doing that 2 to 3 times a week. So 2 to 3 times a week, I had a fresh audience. Just keep this in mind. If you'll grasp this one concept, you'll be able to try out material at will. And I'm going to tell you how to do it in the speaking environment.
Okay.
If you grasp that the mechanics for laughter in the speaking environment are no different than on the stand-up comedy stage, it'll open up opportunities to try your material like you've never had before.
Okay.
Okay, because the mechanics are all the same. The mechanics are all the same. So the only difference in the speaking environment is you've got to give content. You've got to give the lesson plan. But what you do is you build in a segue from the material that you're required to teach. You build in a segue that leads into your new bit. And, you make sure that that's rehearsed. And that's kind of thing. I used to do this all the time. I'd go into a speaking gig, they want me to do motivational speaking. They want me to talk about women's roles in nursing, or whatever the deal is. And every single speaking gig I could do, somehow I could segue into stupid people that are so stupid that they actually make the news.
Uh-huh.
And once I segued into that, guess what? I'm into my bit. I'm into my comedy material. And then at the end, I'd go, well, that was kind of lengthy and off topic. We need to get back to the real fun stuff.
That definitely makes sense, because I definitely, I usually have some stuff in class that's often just, a reaction to the material that will, it will basically kill the student. And I'm thinking some days I'm like, what a great bit of timing right there, so you're right, I can actually more purposefully develop some stuff in class. I think that would be
absolutely, dude. And just never tell them you're doing stand-up stuff. You're building your own opportunity to introduce your stuff and what you're doing is. And I used to set this up. I used to set this up in traffic school. I got to tell you right now. And when I was setting up and giving them all the rules and stuff, that was funny. That was
right.
It was funny stuff. And then as I'm setting up, tell them where the bathroom is and all this kind of stuff. I say I have a tendency to drift off topic. I'm just going to tell you right now. But I come back on topic, and I'm just telling you. So I'm just asking for your forgiveness in advance.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I have a little more fun than I probably should, but I don't think that'll bother anybody. And then I just go right into the stuff, and I wouldn't tell them I'm working on stand-up stuff, because remember, it's all about that reality. It's all about
right.
that body language alignment. And so what happens is from the student's perspective, you've done a little more than segued into drifting off topic.
Uh-huh.
You did. And professors do this all the time. This is not a new thing, I'm telling you.
Yeah,
they'll hit a topic in their lesson plan, and then they'll drift off into a personal experience.
Yep.
Which may or may not really have a whole lot to do with what they're talking about. Am I making sense to you?
Absolutely.
Okay, now, I'm going to do one more thing for you before I wrap this up.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question. Actually, I've got 3 questions to ask you. So I want you to define for me, give me in your best words, I want you to define for me the terms setup and punchline.
All right. Setup is the information that is needed, for the surprise or the change or the, to make the punchline funny.
Okay.
It's sort of like the necessary background info.
Yes, this is perfect. Okay, I want the punchline.
And the punchline is the information that becomes funny because of the context from the setup line. But it's where I'm, where I'm trying to elicit laughter would be the punchline.
Okay, let me just tell you this. You are the first person to get half this right.
Okay.
The very first person I've ever talked to get half this right. And the setup, you've got it down. Here's the punchline. And the reason I like to redefine this is because the definition you gave me for punchline won't help you do anything.
Yeah,
it's academic. It doesn't give you any clue as to how to develop one. Am I making sense?
True. Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually shocked that I was fumbling around there.
So I'm gonna give you a definition of a punchline and show you how to apply it. The definition of a punchline is nothing more than a reaction, your reaction to the setup material that you've presented using your sense of humor.
Huh.
It's a reaction. It's no different than if you're talking with a group of friends, they plop something out, you do a smart-ass remark, and it gets a laugh. What just happened?
Yep.
They gave you setup information, you reacted. If you take a look at any street joke, I'll give you a perfect example. You take just almost any, and I'm not talking knock-knock jokes, but I'm talking street jokes. Sunday school teachers in front of a group of small Sunday school students, and she asks the question, why is it important to be quiet in church? And this one little girl in the back raises her hand and goes, I know. She goes, Mary, what's the answer to that? She goes, because the people are sleeping.
Yeah.
Okay? You take a look at any street joke, and you'll find that the punchline to that is a reaction by one of the characters in that joke as it relates to the setup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
so
true.
So given that, if you've got your material in single-line format, then what you can do is I recommend the process, and that, like I said, when you went through chapters 3 through 9, you go through and you write everything out, funny, not funny, whatever. You print it up, and as you're speaking it out loud, you try to react to every line, every single line that you can. Now, you're not going to be able to with every single line, but you try to. This is no different than stuff that people have done. How many times have you done this? You still there?
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm here. How many times have I performed?
How many times have you picked up a newspaper? How many times have you picked up an encyclopedia and you've read two lines out of what they wrote and made a smart-ass remark on it?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Everybody's done that. Hey, Bob, listen to this. Blah, 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 blah. And then you give your sense of humor approach to what was just written. This is no different.
Yeah, you're right.
No different. So you want to be able to add punchlines that will react to each line, if you can. And you'll have more punchlines than you can deal with.
Yeah, I like that. That opens up a whole new world. That's cool.
Yeah, see, I want people to be funny.
Yeah.
On purpose.
Yeah, that's cool.
Well, this is how you capture your sense of humor for what it is you're talking about, what you're passionate about, what you're amazed over, what you're frustrated with. That's how you capture your sense of humor. Find a comedy teacher out there that can tell you these things. They don't exist.
Yeah, no, you're right.
You know? And this is why my students, they grab my stuff and they actually apply it. Dude, I've been watching videos for people that have been doing this anywhere from 6 to 9 months, and I'm blown away. They're not anywhere near open mic level. Their approach, their opener or middle act level. That's because it doesn't have to take 5 or 10 years to get where you want to go if you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's my approach. So I've got two questions for you.
Okay.
And this is part of the information that I'm gathering. What is your ultimate goal in this whole stand-up comedy adventure?
That's a very good question, because the goal kind of shifts around. Sometimes I think I would like to do this for a living and get really good at it and, you know, teach it sometime, et cetera, et cetera. And then when I come to that view, I end up, you know, other voices in my head say, oh, you can't do that, you know, you're too old, you've got this other job, et cetera, et cetera. But I would still like to, I would actually like to really go for it because I really enjoy
it. Well, the first thing you need to do is kill that thought with some kind of medication.
Yeah.
I'm not recommending alcoholism or anything, but they may have something at the doctor. You need to kill that. You're not too old. Dude, the only thing that we have to look forward to is croaking.
Exactly.
Okay, so this whole too old thing, ain't gonna buy it. Sorry.
Yep. But I agree with you.
Go ahead.
What's that?
I'm sorry?
Oh, your voice is breaking up on me. But yeah,
I'm sorry.
It's my computer phone, I'm sure. The too old thing definitely doesn't help me to think that. I think I actually would like to go for it with this stuff because one thing I've noticed about myself is, you know, where I'm also, you know, doing this, you know, legal academic thing, which I'm not that enthused about. And then when I see an opportunity to do comedy, like when I got the email about your coaching sessions, I jumped on that right away. I get very enthused
about
it.
Well, I always get enthused when I hear funny.
Right.
That enthuses me. So let me just tell you this. I'm running a little bit over, and I still got one more question, but I got to tell you this.
Okay.
If you'll work clean and you work outside the comedy club market and you do have an act,
yep.
I'm going to tell you right now, you can make $1,000 a whack, bro. That's at the low end. There's people out there making $3,500 to $5,000 a show for a one-hour show.
Wow.
And you've never heard of them.
Yep.
That's because they're not working in the comedy club market. The comedy club market is the hardest market and the lowest paying market. People do not realize there's a world of comedy opportunity out there if they knew what the hell to do.
Yep.
So there's that. Now, here's my last question.
Okay.
And let me just say, if you want a copy of this, I'm not big on sales, but if you want a copy of this, I'll process it. I run it through a thing where it takes out all the long spaces and shortens them down to half a second, so it goes along click, clickety click. If you want a copy of that, I'll get it to you for $20. If you don't, it's cool.
No, definitely. I'd like one, so definitely.
And I won't use this for any product, but I may use sections for testimonials, and if I do, that's with permission only.
Okay, sure.
You know, this is more. I'm trying to get a feel for what people are looking for. What is the gaps that because my book is one dimensional. My books are one dimensional. They're words on paper. They're not and you can only do so much. Am I making sense?
Yep, definitely.
So I'm looking at focusing on some specific things based on the questions that people ask and the few questions that I ask. And here's my last question.
Okay.
My last question is this. Let's just imagine for a moment that I have a trunk, and this trunk is filled with every possible resource that you'd ever use, effective resource that you could ever use for stand-up comedy. And if I said, Brian, I'm going to reach into this trunk, and I'm going to give you one of these resources that's going to help you right now achieve something right now, something that you want, something that you need to go. It's a step towards your stand-up comedy adventure. What would that what would that resource be?
Huh, that's a good question.
What would it be about? Like, it could be an audio, could be a video, could be an e-book, whatever it is.
You know what I think it would be? For me, it would be maybe something like, what are some really good next steps, right? Like, what are some really, you know, to be really personalized, I'd say, what are my next steps at this point of my career? So that would be, you know, what are some possible paths to take? That would be definitely one resource that would be helpful to me.
Mm.
It's super personalized.
Next steps based on where you're at now. How often are you performing?
I've performed, let's see, in the past few weeks I've performed twice, on September 25th and October 4th.
Were these comedy club type venues?
Yeah, yep.
Okay. I would be, again, and I'm not very good at this, at being the quote-unquote sales guy. If you wanted more coaching and you wanted more than an hour of that coaching to talk about these types of things, I mean, I would be in a position, I would be, and I don't, and I haven't, this, you're the first person that I've offered this to, because I just don't do this kind of stuff, but I'd be willing to work with you on a longer term basis if you want to do that to get you where you need to be.
Okay.
So I'm just offering that up. I sales pitch is on my webpage. And,
right.
And even that, sometimes I should be more salesy, you know, but hey, what can I say? But I love doing this. People don't realize that this isn't, my comedy business is not my most profitable adventure, not by far.
Uh-huh.
But I love it. Can't let go of it.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I
just can't.
Yeah.
I love it too much, and I know too much about it, so I just can't let it go. But, I will. You have to give me some time because I'm just, as far as processing this audio. But if you give me some time, I'll send you a link. I mean, I'll send you an email to make sure that you want it. And if you do, now I've got to process that manually. So you just have to be a little patient with me, because I'm not going to set up a page and all that other crap. You know, like I said, this will just be for each individual that wants one of these.
Okay.
Does that make sense? And then I mean, no, that's it. That's all I have. So. Brian, it's a pleasure to meet you, and it's always a pleasure to talk with another educator.
Yeah, that's one thing I liked when I got your materials, earlier this year. I was like, oh, he's a teacher, he knows where I'm coming from, et cetera, et cetera. So that's very cool.
Absolutely, it's a big deal. A lot of people out there that have stuff online. Are not teachers, and their material shows.
Right.
it's like, when you teach, I was a career teacher in the Navy. For 18 of my 20 years, I was a teacher. And,
wow.
And in the Navy, you have to teach people. I went on to do college education, too. Taught in a number of colleges. But the reality is, in the Navy, when you teach somebody stuff, there's no pie-in-the-sky theory, dude. You got to teach people to go out and actually do something.
Exactly.
You know, and I was in the medical field, so you have to teach people how to do something and kill somebody. You know, so that's where I come from, and that's why I'm, my materials are few. It takes me a long time to come up with material, because I'm just, and not so much that I'm a perfectionist, but I want people to have the information that they need instead of just pie-in-the-sky theories and whatnot.
Yep. Yeah, that's great.
So, Brian, it's been a real pleasure, man, and I can only encourage you to attack this aggressively before you get that first Social Security check.
Right. Love it. Yeah, no, this is great. I really appreciate this.
Oh, well, dude, it's my pleasure, and you just keep rocking. All right, man?
All right.